Are you being influenced? If you've watched a blockbuster film in the last decade, there's a chance it's been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP may be running the largest influence campaign in history. In Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP exerts control over some major studios. Don't miss the most important documentary about Hollywood yet. And for a limited time, you can watch the first 10 minutes for free at HollywoodTakeover.com/Ben. HollywoodTakeover.com/Ben. When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome. It is Verdict with Senator Ted Cruz, Ben Ferguson with you. And Senator, I think it's time that we do a really nice job exposing the left and the dark money that is funding all of these anti-Israel protests across the country.
Well, that's exactly right. We're more than a week into these rabid anti-Israel, pro-Hamas protests that we're seeing at college campuses across the country. And a question that keeps coming up is, where is this money coming from? More than a few people have noticed, gosh, these protesters all seem to have matching tents. The tents are brand new. Who's paying for them? There's clearly real money behind that. We're going to do a deep dive into that.
Yeah, you're not trying to hide it, by the way, when the tents match.
Yeah, there's
right?
there's no subtlety. It's like wearing matching uniforms. It's clear somebody paid for them.
Yeah.
That's happening. On top of that, we're going to do a deep dive into NPR. NPR has a new CEO. NPR is supposed to be National Public Radio. It is funded in significant part by your and my tax dollars, and yet their new CEO is a hard left partisan activist. She has no pretense of being impartial, of being unbiased. She is a leftist, a proud, unabashed leftist. We're going to go into her record as well.
Want to tell you real quick about a cool note I got from one of you guys, and it said, Ben, I'd heard you talk about Patriot Mobile, and then I did some digging, and I found out that you really weren't joking about how radical Big Mobile has gotten in supporting Democratic causes and candidates. But I didn't switch because I've switched before and it took forever. And then finally, I actually had enough with my cell phone carrier and I switched, and you were right. It is now really easy with technology. Yes, switching your cell phone provider is not hard like it used to be. And if you are sick and tired of the left, then stop funding them. Well, when you pay your bill to Big Mobile, there's a very good chance you're supporting Democratic causes, candidates, organizations that include Planned Parenthood. That's why I switched to Patriot Mobile, and it's why I want you to switch as well. Because when you do, 5% of your bill every month, on average, without it costing you any more money, actually goes back to support conservative causes, like those causes that support our First and Second Amendment rights and the rights of unborn children. They also do an incredible job supporting our military veterans, our wounded warriors, our first responders, and those that have given the ultimate sacrifice protecting and defending this country. That's another reason why I'm with Patriot Mobile. I'm tired of my money being used against my family values. So join me. Switching is easy. And I'm going to give you free activation as well. Call Patriot Mobile right now, 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Or patriotmobile.com/verdict. That's patriotmobile.com/verdict or 972-PATRIOT. Promo code VERDICT and you'll get free activation. Senator, when you look at all of these protests and you mentioned the matching tents, it's kind of hilarious. They're not even trying to hide it. This is exactly what we saw with Black Lives Matter as well. It seems that anytime we now have really well organized, whether it's shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge, the Memphis Bridge, or the New York Bridge, it seems like it's orchestrated. And now we're seeing these sit-ins and these tent cities that are popping up. It's almost like a Black Lives Matter 2.0 playbook here. And it's coming from dark money groups that are funding bail. They're funding the legal support for any and every anti-Israel agitator that's willing to come out and do this.
Well, that's exactly right. There's clearly significant money that are funding these. As we noted a minute ago, their tents match, their tarps match. They come in fully provisioned, and we see them. You know, we're seeing at universities, it's not just students, it's not just spontaneous. They're outside agitators who are treating it as a job. So what do we know? Well, there was an article that came out this week in News Nation that says, begins with the following. Columbia University is warning of potential outside agitators as students hold continued protests calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and a divestment from Israel. And it explains that the demand has its root in the BDS movement, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement, which has been going on for decades attacking Israel. And if you look, there are several organizations who are funding this movement. On Tuesday night, one group that was called Within Our Lifetime held a protest outside the walls of Columbia, calling for resistance, quote, by any means necessary. They were chanting, Columbia, you will see. We are all SJP. Columbia, you will learn. Refugees will return. And if you look at Within Our Lifetime, is one of what News Nation describes as a, quote, vast network of organizations that have coordinated protests, that have blocked highways, delayed trains, and shut down parts of college campuses across the country for the past few months. And it's led, but it's a New York City-based organization. It's led by an individual named Nirdeen Kiswani, who's a 29-year-old who founded the group nearly a decade ago. And if you look at what Kiswani says, he says, quote, I just support the Palestinian people as a whole, and I believe that we have a right to resist. And if they're mad at it, they can talk to Biden, they can talk to the Secretary of State, they can talk to elected officials who keep funding wars abroad, who keep funding death and killing in our name with our tax dollars. And the group claims to not be directly associated with the protest on college campuses. They're intertwined with other organizations. One of the organizations is Students for Justice in Palestine. That's SJP. Jewish Voice for Peace, that's JVP, the Palestinian Youth Movement, that's PYM, and the American Muslims for Palestine, that's AMP. And these are part of the whole network of anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, anti-Semitic groups across the country. And several of the pro-Palestinian organizations don't have public tax filings. NBC did an investigation. Within Our Lifetime does not have any public tax filings. Instead, what they use is a group based in New York. It's a nonprofit group called the Westchester People's Action Coalition Foundation, WESPAC, and it's their fiscal sponsor to collect and process online donations. And tax laws allows them to be a 503 status organization, and they can collect money. We don't know for sure who's funding them. It's dark money. This is by design. This is to hide it. We do know one of the groups, If Not Now, has received $100,000 in the past 5 years from the Rockefeller's Brothers Fund. We also, and that organization's stated goal is, quote, to end U.S. support for Israel's apartheid system. The fund has also awarded nearly $500,000 to the Jewish Voice for Peace, another Palestinian rights organization. And what we're seeing is, well, here are the comments of Jonathan Schanzer. He's a former Treasury Department official who says that the organizing parties are cultivated by potentially dangerous groups. Here's the quote. Quote, they're extremely organized. There are a lot of the Islamist-leaning groups that I think many of us have come to expect here. They are not spontaneous. They are not necessarily organic. They are cultivated by groups that have an axe to grind. And in particular, Schanzer called for more aggressive investigation of the ties between the pro-Palestinian groups and terrorist organizations. He called for this in testimony to Congress. Here's what he said, quote, "Individuals who have previously worked for Hamas charities are now a driving force behind the large pro-Hamas demonstrations taking place in major cities across America." And in particular, he pointed to an individual named Hatam Bazian, who is a lecturer at the University of California, Berkeley, as an example. And Bazian founded the national branch of SJP to promote campus-based activism, and later he launched AMP. And Schanzer claimed that Bazian and his organizations are a part of a network that, quote, is providing training, talking points, materials, and financial support to students intimidating and threatening Jewish and pro-Israel students on college campuses.
You put all that together and you see it, Senator, and it's like, this is pretty obvious. This is something that I think should probably be at some point investigated. In fact, Newsweek has a headline just now, and it says police investigating people behind the pro-Palestinian protests. And that is something that I'm kind of shocked it took this long. But officials, quote, with the New York Police Department said that their department is looking into who may be behind the pro-Palestinian protests that have rocked two universities in Manhattan in recent days. Several dozen demonstrators were arrested by police Monday night after students set up a pro-Palestinian encampment on New York University's campus. The demonstration, which started around 50 individuals near the Stern School of Business, grew to hundreds of protesters before arrests were made. A spokesman from the university said that it believed many of the individuals who joined the rally, including some who breached barriers established by campus safety officers, were not affiliated with NYU. Therefore, they're now saying they are going to investigate it. I mean, this to me is a Captain Obvious no-brainer.
Of course
you should be investigating this.
Of course you are, and I have zero confidence the Biden Department of Justice will investigate. I have zero confidence the Biden FBI will investigate. Why? Because as we've discussed at great length, the Biden DOJ and FBI have been thoroughly politicized and weaponized, and the people funding these anti-Semitic protests are leftists. They are leftists who right now more and more are the base of the Democrat Party. They're funding the Democrat Party in significant respects. They are the radicals. They are the AOCs. They are the people who are chanting in Dearborn, Michigan, death to America and death to Israel. And so the Biden DOJ doesn't want to know. They want to plunge their head into the sand like an ostrich and say, do not tell us. We do not care who's funding it. It is not our concern. And let me point out, A, there are a bunch of leftists, there are a bunch of Marxists, there are a bunch of communists who hate America who are funding this, I believe, because they hate America, because they hate Israel. And I will point out, those who hate Israel hate America. There is an overlap. One of the many reasons it is in America's national security interest to support Israel is the enemies of Israel are the enemies of America. There's a reason the Ayatollah chants death to America and death to Israel. The two are interconnected. But there's also a very real risk, and I just noted the congressional testimony laying this out, that these anti-American, anti-Israel protests are literally being funded by our enemies, are being funded by Hamas, are being funded by Hezbollah, or are being funded by Iran or the financial sponsors of Hamas and Hezbollah. And again, we see zero interest on the part of the Department of Justice to investigate whether those who support actual terrorists are funding the protests in support of the actual terrorists. And mind you,
let me ask you this. What does the law then say? Because this is the frustrating part. You look at, this was on Good Day New York on Tuesday. The New York Police Deputy Commissioner of Operations suggested that law enforcement was looking into both instances for signs that the same individuals may be instigating the protest, adding that he believes some could be funding this, quote unquote. In his words, he said, look at the tents, what you said earlier. They all were the same color. They were all the same type of tents, the same ones that we saw at NYU, the same ones that we see in Columbia. To me, I think somebody's funding this. He added that professional agitators have also joined the student-led protests who are just looking for something to be, and I think he was trying to use calm words, agitated. Somebody's behind this, and we're going to find out who it is. But if you're writing this check, Senator, whether it's a Soros group, whether it's coming in from corporations, whether it's coming in from overseas, it seems like they're operating under the idea that, hey, we've got a one degree of separation here. We're just giving the money, and whatever it's used for, that's not us.
Yeah, look, I mean that's right. I mean I've talked about before that for 3 months I've had every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. anti-Israel, pro-Hamas protesters show up at my house. And it's the same 15 people, ironically. Now, I don't know exactly what they look like because they all wear masks, because as we've seen on campuses, these anti-Israel and anti-American zealots are also cowards and they want to hide their face. They're not actually willing to show who they are. But from the appearances, the people at my house, if there are any Palestinians among them, I'd be surprised. They look like a bunch of Hispanic and white liberals who are showing up. But what's interesting is they show up every Saturday at 7 a.m. They leave about 8 a.m. They show up. They have the same cowbells. They have the same whistles. They're screaming. They're waking children up. They're disturbing the neighbors. But they show up like a job. That there is a regularity to it that I'm convinced somebody is paying them to do this. That it's not spontaneous. It's not driven by external events. It is our job to show up and chant. And by the way, look, A, there is a risk that it is foreign actors who hate America and hate Israel. But B, there is also the very real likelihood that it is local players, anti-American zealots, and the obvious one in particular is George Soros. And I want to point you to an article that Fox News published on April 16th called "Left-Wing Dark Money Group Funds Bail Legal Support for Anti-Israel Agitators Blocking Traffic." And what Fox News reported was, quote, "A left-wing dark money group funded by billionaire George Soros will provide bail and legal support for anti-Israel activists arrested after blocking major roads and highways nationwide this week," according to an online fundraiser. And the demonstrations were largely organized by A15 Action, a recently created group that said it would, quote, coordinate a multi-city economic blockade on April 15th in solidarity with Palestine. And under the group's, quote, resources section on its website, there is a, quote, bail and legal defense fund hosted by Act Blue. Now understand, Act Blue is the leading fundraising platform for Democrat candidates nationwide. It raises billions of dollars for Democrat candidates running across the country. Act Blue is essentially an extension of the Democrat Party, and it is Act Blue that is raising money for the Bail and Legal Defense Fund to bail out anti-Israel, pro-Hamas protesters who have been arrested. And the threshold to being arrested is pretty high, particularly in blue jurisdictions. And according to the website, the contributions, quote, will benefit Community Justice Exchange, which is a project of the Tide Center that is funded by George Soros. And the fundraising page continues, quote, "Donate here to support community members who are criminalized in the U.S. for their solidarity with Palestine." And it goes on to say, quote, "Should the actions of the state result in the need for it, these funds will be used for bail, legal defense, and support for defendants." And the Community Justice Exchange describes its mission as to provide, quote, "money bail, court fees and fines to community-based organizations across the country that are experimenting with bottoms-up interventions that contest the current operation and function of the criminal, legal, and immigration detention system." So bottoms-up interventions, that's a euphemism for riots, for angry, disruptive protests. And to give you a sense of the volume, in November, it was revealed that the Soros-backed Open Society Policy Center had given $13.7 million through the Tide Center to groups that have expressed support for Hamas or have justified attacks on Israel, with over $15 million donated since 2016.
That's incredible. And yet, they're basically aiding and abetting and advocating for people to break the law and advocating for them to get arrested. And this is all apparently still legal. Welcome to where we are in this country right now. Want to tell you real quick about my friends over at Chalk. The 2024 election is upon us, and the war on masculinity in America today is, well, more blatant than ever. And I want you to know that now is the time to choose strength and vitality over weakness and complacency. The problem is men's testosterone levels are off a cliff historically. They're now at an all-time low. And isn't that what the liberal elites really want, a weak and docile underclass? Well, thankfully, My good friends, the Patriots at Chalk, C-H-O-Q, are here to help real American men take back your right to proudly maximize your masculinity by boosting testosterone levels up to 20% over 90 days. Look, when I hit 40, things just change. And I can tell you, I've been taking now Chalk for over a year. It works. It's manufactured right here in the U.S. of A. Chalk's natural herbal supplements are clinically proven to have game-changing effects on your energy, your focus, and your mood. So if you're sick and tired of just feeling tired, get back what you may have lost with low testosterone. Maximize your masculinity today at Chalk, C-H-O-Q.com. Use the code VERDICT for a massive discount on any subscription for life. That's C-H-O-Q.com. Promo code VERDICT for lifetime savings on any subscription. Limited time offer. Subscriptions are cancelable at any time. One other question, Senator, I want to ask, and this goes back to the people that are running these universities that are allowing this anti-Semitism to continue to grow. Your one of your friends in the House, Speaker Johnson, he went to Columbia and actually called for the Columbia president to resign. Here is what he had to say.
Let me say this very simply. No American of any color or creed should ever have to live under those kinds of threats. That is not who we are in this country. Sadly, Columbia's administrators have chosen to let the threats, the fear, and the intimidation of the mob rule to overtake American principles like free speech and the free exchange of ideas and the free exercise of religion. They have co-opted First Amendment arguments to protect genocide and to elevate the voices of anti-Semitism. They have proven themselves to be incapable of achieving their basic responsibility, which is keeping students safe. We just can't allow this kind of hatred and anti-Semitism to flourish on our campuses, and it must be stopped in its tracks. Those who are perpetrating this violence should be arrested. And I'm here today joining my colleagues and calling on President Shafiq to resign if she cannot immediately bring order to this chaos. As Speaker of the House, I am committing today that the Congress will not be silent as Jewish students are expected to run for their lives and stay home from their classes hiding in fear. In the House of Representatives, we've already acted to address anti-Semitism on campuses. We have passed a number of statutes to address this matter, and we call upon the U.S. Senate to act upon our legislation.
He obviously came in with a game plan, and it's sad that the president of the United States of America isn't saying exactly what Speaker Johnson said. Immediately, the media attacked him and other people that went to Columbia saying, oh, this was just a PR stunt, a publicity stunt. They don't really care about what's happening on campuses. They saw an opportunity here. I couldn't disagree with that more, but I'm glad that we have conservatives that are saying enough is enough.
Yeah, no, it was exactly the right thing to do. Joe Biden lacks the courage or conviction to do the same thing. And in fact, he's terrified to confront these radicals because more and more they're the base of the Democrat Party. I'll tell you, yesterday, AOC, in response to the Speaker of the House and several House Republicans going to Columbia, she tweeted out, let me quote her tweet, quote, "Several here, like Representatives Lawler and DeEsposito, are vulnerable New York Republicans in tight seats. They have played a key role drumming up pressure to crack down on students and asymmetrically police Palestinian human rights speech. Those campus hearings, GOP-led, they need to lose." And so I tweeted out in response. I retweeted her and I said, "Understand, AOC explicitly supports the anti-Semitic mobs threatening Jewish students at Columbia, Yale, and NYU. But it's not just her. Joe Biden stood next to her as she praised their hateful conduct. The entire Democrat Party is terrified of their radical anti-Israel base." And I'll tell you, AOC actually sent out another tweet, and here's what she said. She said, quote, "Not only did Columbia make the horrific decision to mobilize NYPD on their own students, but the units called in have some of the most violent reputations on the force. NYPD had promised the city they wouldn't deploy SRG to protests. So why are these counterterrorism units here?" And again, I responded to that and said, between law enforcement and pro-Hamas protesters who threaten Jewish students, tragically, Democrats side with the anti-Semites. That is the reality, but it's not just AOC. It's not just the squad. It is where Joe Biden is. It is where Chuck Schumer is. It is where Nancy Pelosi is. It is where the leadership of the Democrat Party is today.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked about the media giving them cover. I expect some in the media to be liberal hacks, right? But this brings up a big issue that we need to talk about with NPR. The new CEO of NPR is someone that is paid by U.S. taxpayers and someone who has described the First Amendment as the number one challenge she faces. Our tax dollars are going to a CEO who's running NPR National Public Radio saying the First Amendment really seems to get in her way. Really? That's where our money is going?
Well, unfortunately, NPR has been profoundly corrupted, and it's been made worse by hiring a CEO who is a brazen, blatant, unapologetic radical leftist, and she doesn't pretend to be unbiased at all. Now, we discussed in a previous podcast a couple of weeks ago the bombshell report from Yuri Berliner. Yuri Berliner was a 25-year NPR employee and was the former business editor of NPR. And he wrote an April 9th essay in the Free Press, which resulted in NPR suspending him for publishing. How's that for free speech? If you criticize us, you're out of here.
Yeah, and you're gone.
And ultimately led to his resignation. So he's gone. This essay cost him his job. But he laid out the incredible bias at NPR and the shift in NPR. So, for example, he laid out in 2011, which was not that long ago, NPR's audience was 26% conservative, 23% middle of the road, and 37% liberal. So it leaned left, but not dramatically so. By 2023, those numbers had shifted dramatically. It was now, instead of 37% liberal, it was 67% liberal. And instead of 26% conservative. It was only 11% conservative. And Mr. Berliner laid out details of how they would stifle stories that were inconvenient to liberals. They would amplify stories like the Russia collusion story, even if they were not supported by the facts. He outlined at great length how NPR had no interest in being impartial, being unbiased. And then you take in the wake of this, in the wake of what should be real concern of, hey, we're National Public Radio. We're supposed to be nonpartisan. We're supposed to be down the middle. Now, look, I, for one, have serious doubts why the taxpayers should fund any radio station. I think there are plenty of for-profit radio stations. I don't know why the government should coercively tax you to pay for yet another radio station. But I'll tell you what, even if there's an argument they should do so for generic news that somehow there's not a market demand for, there is no argument I know of that they should do so only for left-wing propaganda. And the newly appointed CEO, Catherine Marr, has been a hard partisan her whole life. So, for example, in 2020, Marr referred to President Donald Trump as a, quote, deranged, racist sociopath. Well, then I'm confident her coverage of Donald Trump will be fair, as long as she introduces him as a deranged, racist sociopath every time he's covered.
How do you even get that job? And I'm being serious. If you're National Public Radio, how does that automatically disqualify you from that position as soon as they see that quote?
Yeah, and by the way, that's not an outlier. In 2021, she celebrated Trump's banishment from social media, referring to him as a fascist. So she loves censorship. Okay, the former president of the United States, elected by the American people, I'm thrilled that he's being silenced because I dislike his politics and I think he's a fascist. In May of 2020, right in the middle of the George Floyd riots, Marr suggested that looting represented a form of reparative justice for historic wrongs. And she remarked how white silence is tantamount to complicity in violence. She's also posted repeatedly in support of Democrat politicians, including Hillary Clinton, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and Joe Biden. Now listen, as a private citizen, she has a right to be an angry left-wing radical and a hard Democrat partisan. But explain to me why on earth the American taxpayers should fund her partisan propaganda.
Yeah, and yet that's exactly why she probably got the job, because they're like, oh, perfect. You're going to keep pushing this propaganda out there full speed ahead. Want to ask all of you listening right now to do me a favor real quick. I want you to place your hand over your heart if you can. Can you feel that? It's your heartbeat telling you that you are alive. It's the same for a preborn baby. Their heart begins to form at conception. And at just 3 weeks, it is already beating. At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on an ultrasound. And that is why I am proud to say that I'm partnering with Preborn, because we need to help those precious babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinic rescues 200 babies from abortion. Why? Because when a mother with an unplanned pregnancy meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their baby's heartbeat, it is a divine encounter that doubles a baby's chance at life. By 6 weeks, eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby is able to suck his or her own thumb. And for just $28, you can be the difference between life or death of that child. It is incredible, because what Preborn does is they give the chance for a mother to hear the baby's heartbeat. Now, all gifts are tax deductible. You can donate, and you can donate easily. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say the keyword baby. You can donate securely at preborn.com/verdict as well. That's preborn.com/verdict. Senator, if you are at NPR, can you imagine if you are lefty, how much freedom I think it would make you feel like you had to then go out there and continue to push propaganda on the American people if this is your CEO? I mean, it's a license to basically go all in on liberal propaganda at the taxpayers' expense.
No, that is exactly right. And I've got to say, listen, as you know, I'm the ranking member on the Senate Committee of Commerce, Science, and Transportation. And part of my responsibility in that role, we've got jurisdiction over about 40% of the U.S. economy. And part of my responsibility is oversight. And I can tell you that I am actively engaging in oversight right now, calling on NPR to explain why they're willing to put in place a hard left-wing activist, not a neutral journalist, but someone who is biased, who is an active supporter of censorship to violence, to silence the views she disagrees with, why NPR believes that is an appropriate leader for their institution.
Yeah, that's a really great point.
And listen, don't necessarily take our words for it. I want you to listen to Catherine Marr in her own words, because it's going to show just how radical she is. And I want to play a couple of clips. Let's start with her explaining that, in her view, the number one challenge that she faces is the First Amendment of the Constitution. Let's play that clip.
The number one challenge here that we see is, of course, the First Amendment in the United States is a fairly robust protection of rights. And that is a protection of rights both for platforms, which I actually think is very important that platforms have those rights to be able to regulate what kind of content they want on their sites. But it also means that it is a little bit tricky to really address some of the real challenges of where does bad information come from and sort of the influence peddlers who have made a real market economy around it.
I mean, it's amazing, Senator. This is the woman running NPR, and I guess this is almost like the best thing you can put on your resume, right? You're like, hey, I think the First Amendment's a real problem. It's like, perfect. We'd love to hire you at NPR.
Yeah, and she actually says, well, the First Amendment is really important for platforms, but then what she describes as their First Amendment right is for their ability to censor and silence things they disagree with. So to her mind, what she cares about is the ability, if there's a view that is right of center, as far as she's concerned, the First Amendment is all about silencing those views. There can be no dissent. All right, I want you to listen to another clip. This is a TED Talk where she's discussing truth when she was at Wikipedia. And somehow she has a different view of truth than I think you and I might have. Give a listen.
The hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion. Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. Now, that is not to say that the truth doesn't exist. Nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths. And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you and probably for the person sitting next to you. But this may not be the same truth. This is because the truth of the matter is very often, for many people, what happens when we merge facts about the world with our beliefs about the world. So we all have different truths. They're based on things like where we come from, how we were raised, and how other people perceive us.
utter garbage. Like every word of that. You want an indictment of the modern left. You want an indictment of the idiocy of media. You want an indictment of the academic world. You want an indictment of big tech. Good God, what utter garbage. Truth doesn't exist. George Orwell is spinning in his grave and laughing at the same time. 2 + 2 doesn't equal 4. It equals 5 because we say it is. There is no truth. Listen to that quote. Our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. But don't worry. This is only for things that don't matter. The contentious issues. What does she identify? Politics and religion. When it comes to politics and religion, look, Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. But no. Don't have reverence for truth. We're not interested in that. We are interested in set aside a truth. That can be your truth, my truth. Everyone has a truth. Maybe for you, 2 + 2 = 5. What utter garbage. You know what a journalist is supposed to be interested in? The truth. Now, do you have perfect truth? No. Do you have perfect knowledge? No. But you should get damn close to it. You should be trying to get to the truth. Remember what journalists used to learn? Who, what, when, where, how, why? Like, what happened? What are the facts? Well, no. Not according to her. According to her, there are no facts. There is no truth. It's your truth. It's my truth. And my truth, from Catherine Marr's perspective, is as a left-wing partisan, whatever the orthodoxy is. And we will silence views that disagree. And the First Amendment is a pesky, pesky barrier. All right, I want to play one more clip.
Yeah.
One more clip where she's describing what she did at Wikipedia. Listen to this third clip.
I started by talking about the idea of free and open as some of our founding principles, sort of free and open source, coming from the idea of the open source community. Well, I have come to the opinion and the perspective that free and open was a way of looking at the world that was inherently limited relative to what we were trying to achieve. Free and open has the best of intentionality, but in the end, what free and open often ended up doing, and particularly in the case of Wikipedia, was really recapitulating many of the same power structures and dynamics that exist offline prior to the advent of the internet. And so what we ended up seeing was Wikipedia really rebuilt this idea of knowledge as a whole around what the Western canon. You see the exclusion of communities, of languages, because of the ways in which Wikipedia is based on reliable sources. The idea of a written tradition is something that is particular to the idea of a written tradition, which is particular to some cultures and not to others. The ways in which we ascribe notability often really comes from sort of this white male, Westernized construct around who matters in societies and who is elevated and whose voices. And so some of these ideas of sort of this radical openness really did not end up with the intention, really did not end up living into the intentionality of what openness can be.
I mean, that just is brilliant right there.
God bless. So look, she's explaining at Wikipedia, they deliberately abandoned a, quote, free and open approach. By the way, she's telling you what she's going to do at NPR. NPR is not going to be free and open, according to her, because she doesn't believe in free and open. Why? Because free and open, number one, she says, well, that advantages cultures that believe in the written word. Because, you know, what good has book learning ever done anyone? Well, heck, you're forgetting those cultures that don't believe in that fancy learning stuff. Like, what utter garbage. I'm sorry. I thought actually a journalistic outfit should actually reflect, celebrate the best of education, of learning, of what we know. But she says, no. If it's actually free and open, it will recapitulate a white male westernized construct. Let me ask you something, Ben. What the hell does that mean? Seriously, those are the words Marxists use, and typically, the more syllables they use when they get polysyllabic, the less they're making any sense. So explain to me the phrase, recapitulate a white male westernized construct that does not end up living into the intentionality of what openness can mean.
Yeah.
Those words have no content other than I want the power to silence things I don't like. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. And my question goes back to this for you. It used to be at NPR and others, they would at least fake it, like their bias. Now it's just flat out open, and they're doing it with our tax dollars. Is there ever going to be a day of reckoning where NPR finds out, hey, good luck, do your own thing, because we're not going to pay for this propaganda anymore?
Look, if NPR cares at all about journalistic integrity, if they care at all about continuing to receive taxpayer funds, they should terminate Catherine Marr immediately. Her job should be done. They should not have a rabid left-wing partisan who hates the First Amendment, who views it as an inconvenience, who wants to censor conservatives, who is actively, explicitly, and unabashedly opposed to free and open communication, who doesn't believe in truth, who believes truth is an impediment to what she's doing. That is not a journalist in any way. She ought to go and join Emily's List. She ought to go and join the DNC. She ought to go run for Congress and become a henchman to Nancy Pelosi. She should not actually be running a news organization, especially not a news organization funded by the taxpayers. And if we have, to be honest, if you had a Democrat who had a shred of integrity, they would say, of course, this is not appropriate for her to run NPR. The chances of that happening are zero. But I can tell you, I'm going to be pushing for accountability, and I'm going to be pushing for oversight of NPR, because it is brazenly shameless for them to put someone so wildly unqualified in that position.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Don't forget, we do this show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Make sure you hit that subscribe auto download button as well, so you do not miss an episode. We also do our week in review. If you miss something during the week, we do that on Saturdays and on those in-between days. Make sure you grab my podcast. I'll keep you updated on the latest breaking news, the Ben Ferguson podcast. So download that as well. And the Senator and I will see you back here in a couple of days.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.